Good morning. In 1965, the Rolling Stones recorded a song about not being able to find something that they're looking for, something that they wanted, something that they weren't happy with in the world. They wrote a song about trying to find satisfaction. I can't get no satisfaction, 'cause I try and I try and I try and I try. I can't get no satisfaction. The Rolling Stones aren't the only ones who have tried to find satisfaction in the world, and they are far from the first ones to try. This morning, I would like us to look at Solomon, son of King David, who reigned as king of Israel after David. In 1 Kings chapter 3, God asked Solomon what Solomon wanted God to give him. He could have asked for anything: material blessings, long life, the death of his enemies. But he asked for wisdom. He asked for a heart to discern from good and evil. And because he asked for wisdom, God gave him that. But he also gave him riches and honor. He gave him what he didn't ask for. Not everything, but he could have asked for riches and honor and gotten those, but he asked for wisdom and got riches and honor as well. Solomon reigned as king. Reign as king started off well. He built a temple to God, the one that David wanted to build, but was denied. But like with a lot of us, Solomon was enticed away from God by the world and his search for satisfaction. I'm going to be reading from Ecclesiastes this morning. Ecclesiastes, well, starting in chapter 1. So Solomon, he was given wisdom from God, but he still wanted more. He wanted more wisdom. He wanted more knowledge. I guess there is a difference between wisdom and knowledge. But Solomon had this, he thought he would find satisfaction through knowledge. And we can read about what he says about that in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, starting in verse 12. It says, I, the preacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem, and I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This burdensome task God has given to the sons of man by which they may be exercised. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed all is vanity and grasping for the wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be numbered. I communed with my heart, saying, look, I have attained greatness. I have gained more wisdom than all who were before me in Jerusalem. My heart has understood great wisdom and knowledge. And I set my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is grasping for the wind. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. Solomon sought satisfaction through wisdom, through knowing things. There are other references to his knowledge and what he knew about natural things, the way of the earth, the birds, the animals, through other scriptures and other books. And he knew so much that people would come to hear him speak just about what he knew. But did this bring him satisfaction? No. He says in verse 14 that I've seen it all. I've seen all of the works that are done under the sun, and all is vanity. Now, Solomon is writing this after the fact. So he's done all these things already, and he's telling us now about them. So looking back at his seeking of satisfaction through wisdom, he's saying it's all vanity. And also in verse 18, it says, for in much wisdom is much grief. For he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. But why is that? Why are we more sorrowful when we know more things? I was looking for some answers for this, and I came upon a commentary by Matthew Henry, and I'm going to quote him. I don't usually quote commentaries, but it reads well this time. It reads, The more we know, the more we see there is to be known. And consequently, we perceive with greater clearness that our work is without end. And the more we see of our former mistakes and blunders, which occasions much grief. So the more we know that we don't know, the more we realize there's more to know. And then when we know that more, when we know the more information, we can see more of the mistakes we've made in the past. So as Solomon was learning more, he was realizing more and more of errors that he's made. It didn't change him right away. He was still on a satisfaction quest, but he was more aware of the mistakes he's made. So he did not find satisfaction through knowledge. Moving on to chapter 2, he also tries to find satisfaction in pleasure, in joy, in laughter, in entertainment. Chapter 2, verses 1 through 3. I thought in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. But that also proved to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is foolish. And what does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing folly. My mind still guided me with wisdom. I wanted to see what was worthwhile for men and to do under heaven during the few days of their lives. Solomon is again trying to entertain himself. He's trying to have fun, to enjoy life, to laugh. Solomon calls laughter of the lighter side of pleasure and joy sheer madness. And Solomon asks if anything substantial is achieved through laughter. What does laughter accomplish? He says in Proverbs 14 and 13, even in laughter the heart may sorrow. At the end of joy may be grief. So even in laughter the heart may sorrow. It can be sad. At the end of joy may be grief. There is some benefit to laughter, at least short term. It can create endorphins within us that are good for us. But Solomon was looking through satisfaction. He was wanting to be satisfied through entertainment, through laughing. And he found none. Because eventually laughter stops. Eventually what was funny once won't be funny again. If we hear the same joke over and over and over and over and over, by the 10th, 50th time, it's not so funny anymore. We're getting kind of sick of it. Kind of sorrowful. We got to hear that again. So there's no satisfaction. And after that, Solomon turned to alcohol. Turned to wine. He wanted to see if he could find satisfaction through numbing of his senses, I would imagine. And I'm sure he did for a while he was drinking, but like with any drug, it wears off, and you are left where you started, if not worse. Solomon wrote about wine and drinking in Proverbs chapter 20, verse 1. He wrote, wine is a mocker, strong drink is a brawler, and whoever is led astray by it is not wise. Again, looking at Matthew Henry commentary, he wrote, speaking about alcohol and wine, this is about wine, says it mocks him. It mocks the one who indulges in it. It makes a fool of him. It promises him that satisfaction which can never give him It smiles upon him at first, but at the last it bites. So wine is a mocker because it can seem pleasant at first. It's sweet. You can drink more of it without knowing its effects. And then it's going to come back and bite you. And then, like I mentioned, you're going to feel worse if you indulge too much. So Solomon did not find ultimate satisfaction in pleasure, laughter, or alcohol. I mentioned that Solomon was immensely wealthy. There's other references to his wealth, and he was at that time the wealthiest man alive, if I remember correctly. So he could do anything he wanted, essentially. So after seeking satisfaction through knowledge and then through pleasure, he was trying to find it in his accomplishments. So back in chapter 2, now reading 4 through 7. I made great works. I made my works great. I built myself houses and planted myself vineyards. I made myself gardens and orchards, and I planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made myself water pools from which to water the growing trees of the grove. So Solomon had all of these projects, these building projects, in order to find satisfaction in. He spent 7 years building the temple to God. He spent 13 years building his own house. Solomon also built a house, a palace, it's called, for one of his wives, which we'll get to that. This wife, in particular, was the daughter of Pharaoh in Egypt, and because he didn't want her living in his house, his father's house, David's house, because the Ark of the Covenant had once been in this house, which made it holy. And since she was not from Israel, she was an Egyptian, she didn't worship God, she worshipped other gods. So he didn't want her going in there. So he knew something. He knew that wasn't right. But he built her own palace. He fortified the many cities that he conquered, or that he ruled over. So he had all these projects, all these accomplishments of building things. But as he'll state coming up when I get to the next one, that's vanity as well. It didn't satisfy him. So similar to the accomplishments, because he had to spend all this money to build all these things. So he had all this money, but then he could just buy whatever he wanted. If you have immense wealth, if you see something, you can just buy it. You would think that would satisfy you, but it didn't. Moving on to verse 7 of chapter 2. I acquired male and female servants and had servants born in my house. Yes, I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all who were in Jerusalem before me. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the special treasures of kings and of the provinces. I acquired male and female singers, the delights of the sons of men, and musical instruments of all kinds. So I became great and excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained in me, with me. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my reward from all my labor. And Solomon had a limitless ability to fulfill whatever desire he had. And another possession of Solomon were his wives. This is how he looked at them, I believe, as possessions. I mentioned one of Solomon's wives was the daughter of Pharaoh, but many of his wives were not of Israel. Many of them were from other countries that did not worship God. 1 Kings 11 and 3, it says, and he had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines. And his wives turned away his heart. So he had 700 wives and 300 concubines, 1,000 women in his life. Solomon sought satisfaction through lust. through, again, pleasure. Did he find it? Let's look at what Solomon says about women that draw one away from God. So again, these were women that weren't Israelites. They were leading him astray, and this is what caused his downfall, were these women. So let's look at what he says later in his life, later in Ecclesiastes, chapter 7, verse 26. "And I find more bitter than death the woman whose heart is snares and nets, whose hands are fetters. He who pleases God shall escape from her, but the sinner shall be trapped by her." I find more bitter than death the woman whose heart is snares and nets. So later in his life, Solomon had learned that those 700 pagan women had drew him away from God. They had led him away from God. And he said that it would have been better for him to die than to be trapped by them. Solomon could not find satisfaction by having 700 wives. So after all of his searching for satisfaction, what was his conclusion? Verse 11 of chapter 7, of chapter 2. 2 and 11. "Then I looked on all the works that my hands had done, and on all the labor in which I had toiled, and indeed all was vanity and grasping for the wind, for there was no profit under the sun." He couldn't get no satisfaction. Solomon couldn't find any satisfaction with the knowledge that he had gained, with the things that he had built, with all of his numerous possessions and wealth, and after indulging in physical pleasure. Solomon could not find satisfaction with anything under the sun. But he did eventually find satisfaction. Solomon finally turned back to the Lord. Ecclesiastes 12:13. "Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all." There can be no satisfaction, no ultimate satisfaction at least, under the sun, here on earth. The ultimate satisfaction can only be found with God. After a lifetime of trying everything that he could think of to satisfy himself here on earth, Solomon realized that he could only be satisfied when he went back to God. When I am doing my exercises and lifting weights downstairs, there comes a point when I'm almost done with my sets, when I'm almost finished, my body and mind are then trying to tell me I should just be satisfied with what I've done, so far, and I should just stop. Like, you've done enough, just go ahead and stop. Be satisfied, you've done enough. But there's a motivational phrase that I keep thinking about, that I've seen and recently put a sign up downstairs to help me remember it, that keeps me going. "Don't stop when you are tired. Stop when you are done." Don't stop when you are tired. Stop when you are done. But in order for me to know when I am done, I first need to have a plan. I need to know what I'm supposed to do. So I have a list of exercises that and lifts that I want to do for that day, and I don't stop until I'm done. I'm not satisfied with completing 95% of it. I want 100%. So I'll stop when I'm done. In our Christian lives, God has given us a plan as well. God's given us a plan, a list, so to speak, a plan that we are to do in our lives. And Solomon reminds us of this plan. Fear God and keep his commandments. This is God's plan. If we get tired of following it, that doesn't mean we should be tired or satisfied with what we've done so far. When we get tired of doing it, don't be satisfied. Solomon tried to find satisfaction in many different ways and wasn't able to because he wasn't done. He hadn't completed the plan. So as long as we are living, we are not done. We're not done. The plan is not done. Fear God and keep his commandments. You are never done until we stop breathing. So we should not be satisfied with what we've done so far. We need to keep on the plan. In closing, I'd like to look back at in chapter 2. I'd like to look at those gardens that Solomon built. When he was trying to find satisfaction, he was building lots of things. He built himself houses and vineyards. And it says, I made myself gardens and orchards. Now look at these gardens. I'm using other people's references. I couldn't find it myself. But in the Old Testament, in the Greek, we usually find it in the Hebrew, but in the Greek version of the Old Testament, the word used there for garden is the same word used when describing the Garden of Eden. So Solomon was trying to create his own Garden of Eden here on earth. So I'm sure it was beautiful. I'm sure it had to be beautiful. But he was trying to build himself a Garden of Eden. And what's also interesting is this, that word in Ecclesiastes for garden also has a similar meaning to the word in the New Testament, which means paradise. And this word is used in Luke 23 and 43 when Jesus is talking to one of the other thieves hanging on the cross next to him. When he says, assuredly I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise. So Solomon is trying to build for himself a paradise here on earth, his own Garden of Eden. He had built himself a paradise, but it did not satisfy him here on earth. It's because his paradise was on earth. The paradise that Jesus is referring to is not on earth. And this paradise we can also go to. We can be with him in paradise. That is where we find satisfaction. That's where we'll be satisfied, is in paradise. That will be satisfying. So if you want to be satisfied with what you've done in this life, by joining Jesus in paradise, if you need to, you are invited to come forward and accept him as your Savior as we stand and sing.